Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelk. The man next to me is former Giants offensive lineman and Super Bowl champion David Deal. And the phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to get in touch with us and connect with the show that way you can. David, the Giants getting ready to take on the Arizona Cardinals on Christmas Eve in Glendale, Arizona, a place that's very familiar for you.
Yeah. Not only, and that's the thing, people always remember, obviously, the Super Bowl in 07, but we had an unbelievable game there in 2011 when we came back, took over the game in the fourth quarter. Hakeem Nicks with the big touchdown catch, and, you know, I don't know what it is, but there's something in the water in Arizona that, you know, the Giants football team, I know that in the past, we showed up, and, you know, I think having that familiar background is going to be different for this football team because figure going there in 2007 and then playing in that game in 2011 in Arizona again, you know, there was a lot of people on our team in 11 that were a part of the 07 team. You know, when we look at now this Giants team going into there, that nostalgia is only really there for Eli Manning and Zach Diassi.
Yeah, that's it.
It's not there for any of the other football players. So when we talked earlier in the week, you and I discussed this. You know, it's easy to get amped up and excited when you're playing the Dallas Cowboys. It's easy when you're playing the Philadelphia Eagles and you have one of the best teams in the NFC, if not the best at that time, coming in. But it's another thing to go on the road to play on Christmas Eve up against the Arizona Cardinals football team that has battled the same adversity that you have as a football team. You think about the quarterback position. Carson Palmer hurt. They go to Stanton. Stanton get hurt. They go to Blaine Gabbert. Now they're going back to Stanton. Their offensive line just completely got Blaine Gabbert this last game destroyed. Six sacks on him. And when you look at their defense, they have pieces in place. But because of the issues and injuries, not only on that side of the ball, but on offense, outside of Chandler Jones, he's the only true one that showed up each and every game with statistical numbers that you need. So this is an important game for the Giants football team. And I don't mean to go on a little bit of something here, but
go ahead.
You know, this is something that I had a discussion with, actually with my buddy, and you know, something that I've always done on this show. I love, especially in the times of adversity, being able to listen to our fans call in. You know, our Giants fans are passionate. They have belief in this organization, and it's passed down from generation to generation. And I was having a conversation with one of my buddies yesterday. He is a huge Giants fan, born and raised Giants fan here. And yesterday, I'm talking to him on the phone last night. He's like, oh, man, it's got to be rough. They're making you still do those here's the deals. And I started laughing. And I go, are you serious? He goes, yeah, that's got to be tough. I go, you know, first of all, you know, when you start something in life, from the time that I was a kid, my dad always, you finish it. And that's been a product of who I am as a person and the reason why I've had success in my life. And throughout prosperity, throughout adversity, you always lean on the fact that if you have a job to do, if you have a goal to hit, each and every day you're checking something off in that box to make sure that you're reaching it. So I know in times of adversity like we're facing now, with all the things that have taken place on the field, off of the field, it's a tough time. I get that. But this adversity, these times, have built the two Super Bowl teams that I were a part of. It built the character of those teams to, number one, not ever let this happen again, but two, the characteristics of the players in the team that you're putting out on the field and how will they respond moving forward. And I know that we're looking to the future of this team and we want this to be over, but there are going to be some core players on this team that are fighting for an opportunity to be a Giant and in the NFL. And that's a real thing when you're talking about starting something and finishing a season like this one.
Yeah, and look, it's going to be a tough game against the Cardinals, Dave. They have a very good defense. And especially at home, they play even better at home than they do on the road. You mentioned Chandler Jones. Patrick Peterson is still there. The Honey Badger is still there.
Still there.
So they have some players on defense, and this Giant offense is going to have to be just as efficient as they were against the Eagles last week, against a defense that I think probably is a little bit better than the Eagles' defense, in order to move the football and score some points.
No question. And you know that Patrick Peterson is going to line up on who he feels is a primary receiver, and that's going to be Sterling Shepard.
Do you think he'll go in the slot to cover him?
Yeah, I do. I think that
really?
He'll, yeah, because I think at this point in this part of the season where Patrick Peterson's at, I think he still likes that challenge and showing that versatility of going in and out. And when they're out of the playoffs right now, once again, showing your characteristics of who you are as a football player, I feel like this is a time for him to try to highlight that. Not to mention, if he's not doing that, you're going to knock him as a football player, because if you declare and you consider yourself one of the best corners in the NFL, and now you're going up against a Giants team, and I'm saying this with all honesty, outside of Sterling Shepard, not a primary starting receiver in the NFL, then you're up to the challenge to going in and outside.
Yeah, and look, that'll be a fun matchup to watch.
Absolutely.
And then maybe that'll give Evan Ingram a chance to do some damage. But defensively for the Giants, rather, Dave, there should be an opportunity to make some plays. Look,
absolutely.
Drew Stanton's a backup quarterback. He's a solid backup quarterback, yep. But he's still a backup. And you mentioned their issues on the offensive line. The Cardinals have allowed more sacks than every other team in the NFL this year except for one. They're 31st sacks allowed. So maybe they could have a bit of a replay of that game they had against Washington on Thanksgiving night when their offensive line was banged up. They got 6 sacks in that game. Maybe the defense can put together a vintage pass rush performance. And much like you said before, quite frankly, something that's been lacking from this
exactly.
team this year.
And think about, if you're able to get after Drew Stanton at the quarterback position, he was out due to injury. He's just coming back. You know he's going to be a little bit rusty. So if in the first quarter you can start getting some hits on him, that's where defensively you can create those takeaways that you need to give your offense more opportunities up against this defense that is playing very well.
Dave, one amazing thing to me, and I was trying to get ready for Carl Banks' strategy segment, which you'll see on Giants First and 10 this weekend, and he wanted to do something on Chandler Jones, and
yeah.
He is, by the way, as advertised, long, lanky, good pass rusher, he's got the body type.
And the thing that you love about him as a pass rusher, he's not the biggest guy, but he mixes in a bull rush just to change up his repertoire outside with his secondary moves. He is an elite pass rusher.
Number two, and this is what kind of really impressed me, because I knew Chandler Jones was good. He's a young guy. He's in his prime. Larry Fitzgerald is now primarily a slot-wide receiver.
Wonder.
That dude puts some kind of nuance on his routes where it's a little bit of a hip twitch, a little bit of a shoulder dip.
A little shake.
Just
a
to
little bit,
give
yep.
that cornerback some doubt as to what he's going to do. He is still one of the best route runners in the entire NFL, Dave, and that's how he gets open, along with his size and strength, obviously.
Not to mention, you talk about that, but the intangibles in and out of his breaks clean. And when you watch the great receivers like Larry Fitzgerald, it doesn't matter what route he's running or if he's going to make a block, showing like he's going to go out for a route, his head is still. He never moves his head with his body language. He's always keeping his eyes straight, looking right at the defensive back, so he's not given to tell it which way that he's going. It's unbelievable to watch him and see the way that he's done it. And you talk about a player responding in adversity. You know, think about the time at the big outrage that it was that, Larry, you're not a number one guy anymore. He could have responded either way. He could have responded at going backlash and trying to force it and go someplace else and trying to prove that he's a number one guy someplace else. Or he could have responded the way that he did and showing that he can still do it and that he is still a threat that opens up things for their offense.
Absolutely. All right, that's the game, folks. You can call on and talk about that at 201-939-4513. Stuff going on around the team, Dave. Let's start the Pro Bowl stuff first.
Yep.
Landon Collins, the only starter named for the Giants. I got the rosters up. Right here, Snacks Harrison was named as a alternate.
Yep.
And you know what? This is what drives me nuts. And
Gerald McCoy?
As a former player, I want to kind of get your take on this. The fact that Damon Harrison has never made a Pro Bowl. Look, I get it. This year, you look at the overall performance of the Giants defense and the Giants against the run, and you
yes.
want to give him a hit for that. I understand it from a big picture perspective.
Yeah.
But make no mistake about it. Damon Harrison has been the best player on the Giants this year.
He is and has been the best run-stopping defensive tackle in the NFL statistically 4 out of his 6 seasons. That is not a question mark. That is a fact. That is an absolute fact.
And look, you want to put Fletcher Cox and Aaron Donald on there?
I have absolutely no issues with those.
Wonderful players. And Gerald McCoy, even last year, had a really good season. But he's been banged up this year. He only has
five sacks on the season.
Come on.
And what is one of the reasons why he got in and part of the fanfare?
Five sacks.
But what were?
Hard knocks.
Hard knocks. Tampa Bay were in Hard Knocks. And it brought attention to him. Almost 50% of it was focused on Gerald McCoy.
And he was great in the show, by the way. And he seems like a great guy.
Absolutely. But he has not had the season that Snack Harrison has had. And he's not had a season like he's had in the past.
I don't understand. Look, I understand the fans. They look at stats. They get obsessed with sacks. I get it. And that's part of the voting process. I don't understand how the players in the league, when they sit there and they look at tape, and anybody that's played against this guy over the last 3 or 4 years in the front seven of the defense, how they don't cast their vote for him. Because I'm sure if you go and you ask Zach Martin or Travis Frederick or Jason Kelsey or Brandon Sheriff, you know, any of these guys that's had to block Snacks Harrison.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they understand that this guy is impossible to move. I went to pull plays for inside the film room.
It's not only that he's impossible to move. His lateral movement, his vision to stack, shed, create separation at the line of scrimmage, and go over the top of a nose tackle from the backside and make a play, that's not an ordinary defensive tackle. And once again, you said it earlier, you know, when a lot of people see defensive tackles with a lot of tackles, oh, well, that's a sign of a bad defense. Or it could be a sign of a very good run-stopping defensive tackle.
And that's the case with him, David. I'm pulling plays for inside the film room for him.
We were looking at
him. I'm looking for plays from other players. And every time I'm like, wow, look at Snacks on that. Look at Snacks on that. And I'm not even looking for plays for him. And he just shows up in every play. And I can't tell you how many outside zone stretch plays I saw.
Yeah.
Where he gets outside the damn numbers to take down a running back. He's 320 pounds. And, it's crazy.
And look who's following the lead. Who did we watch film on at defensive tackle?
Dalvin Tomlinson.
Dalvin Tomlinson. Mm-hmm. He is learning, number one, he is living up to the hype that he was the best run-stopping defensive tackle coming out of the draft. But two, you can just see his confidence and his game elevate from game one to now going into week 16. And a part of it is his willingness and wanting to learn, but a lot of it is Snacks. Like, you watch those two in practice, and Tomlinson is attached to his hip, watching his hands, watching his explosion through. And we saw film. We saw him do it against centers. We saw him do it against guards. So this is going to be a very good interior defensive tackle tandem. Now it's about getting another guy healthy consistently in that rotation.
And if it's a couple years down the road, obviously, but Tomlinson right now is actually playing out of position at the three technique.
He's more of a nose, which
is what Snacks Harrison does now. So whenever, you know, he has 3 years left on his contract, whenever he doesn't happen to be a Giant anymore, and believe me, his level of play is still unbelievable, Tomlinson will be able to slide into that spot seamlessly.
No question.
All right. Second topic before we get to your calls. Davis Webb, the big story yesterday, he took, I believe it was 6 first-team offense versus first-team defense snaps in the no-huddle. They gave Eli Manning a little bit of a break.
Yeah.
That got everyone in a lather. Then Steve Spagnuolo said that, wait, hold on a second, there's a good chance he's still going to be inactive on Sunday. But he also said never say never if whether or not he's going to be active. Dave, what does that mean?
It means that they're giving him more reps and they feel that now is a time that they can start preparing him and that he is prepared for in case of an emergency or they feel that he's ready to take the next step.
So you think it's more likely then he'll get into a game now than when it was before he got these snaps?
Well, obviously, I think that, number one, let's face it, this is something that has needed to come to a head at some point.
Of course.
He's needed to take some more reps in practice. We've been saying that for weeks. So I think that, number one, when that does happen with everything that's happened, it gets magnified to where it is right now. But when you think about it, it was one day, it was 6 reps. We'll see if they do more today with him. And then the most important thing is we'll see come Sunday. If he's active, if he's up, then it is a sign that they believe in case of an emergency or in case of something does happen in a football game, that they are prepared that he could handle going into a game.
And the sense that I got listening to Steve Spagnuolo, and I know some fans will probably get annoyed about this, but all I'm telling you is my sense from listening to the guy that's making the decision. If the game's close and the Giants have a chance to win and it's not a blowout either way, Eli Manning is going to be in the football
game.
Of
course.
Period.
It goes without question. It goes without question.
201-939-4513. It's that simple.
That's it. I mean, really.
You know, I'm going to ask you one other thing, because Davis Webb was actually asked a question in his locker yesterday as to whether or not he thought these practice reps helped him get ready for a game. And he went into on this soliloquy, which I thought was 100% on the mark, and I've been saying this to fans forever, how, yeah, it's great, it simulates a game, but it's still nothing like actually playing in a game. And when you take this kid and you drop him in front of a defensive line full of guys that are actually trying to,
and you're not wearing
to
a
murder
red
him,
jersey.
And you're not wearing a red jersey, everything changes.
Oh, yeah.
Especially for a quarterback.
Everything changes, and the speed of the game elevates so much compared to what takes place in practice. Not to mention, now you're not sitting there standing next to your quarterback coach running a play or him kind of 5 yards off to the side, you know, calling it in maybe to the microphone in your helmet. Now you're standing on the road in a stadium with 70,000-plus fans, and he's communicating through. You have the play clock clicking down, and you have to turn around as a young player and communicate and have a look in your eye that is confident enough that the other 10 guys in the huddle believe that you can get the job done. As a quarterback, if the other 10 guys see you walk into a huddle and you can't communicate the play call, you can't get in and out of the huddle, you can't communicate at the line of scrimmage, how are they going to have that confidence and faith in you as a quarterback? And I think we saw that last year in the beginning of the Los Angeles Rams' Hard Knocks. Jared Goff, look at the development that he's made in, from year one to year two. But when he went out there and that opening time that we saw him on Hard Knocks, I mean, they're pulling him out of the huddle. All the guys in the huddle are kind of laughing because he can't even spit out the play call. So how are you going to trust this guy with the football in his hands each and every play when he can't even direct the huddle yet?
And by the way, then you have to process all that information.
Oh, yeah.
Look at a defense in a matter of 6 seconds.
Safety stemming from one side to
one side.
Figure
that out. And then once the ball is snapped and you realize, oh, the defense was just disguising something and they tried to fool me, then you have to make another read in about a half a second and figure out where to go with the football, which is might be the hardest thing besides hitting a baseball in all of sports that anybody has to do.
I've told you this story before, but Eli's first start in Baltimore, it was one of the most unbelievable and incredible things that I've experienced because, number one, you're going up against a phenomenal defense. Still at that time, defense coordinator Rex Ryan.
Ray Lewis was still there.
Ray
the
Lewis.
Whole deal.
Let's see who they had. Ray Lewis.
Ed Reed.
Ed Reed. I mean, Bart Scott was playing for him at that time.
Was Rod Woodson still
Rod
there?
Rod Woodson was on. Deion Sanders was on that football team.
They probably their two big tackles in the middle, right? Yeah. Syracuse and Adams?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they come out and they run a completely different hybrid of 3-4 that they haven't run in three seasons. So it's Eli's first start at Baltimore up against this defense. And I will never forget our first third down. Anytime that Eli would walk up, they would stem to something else. They would move safeties and linebackers. And Ray Lewis is coming up, and Ed Reed is coming up. And Eli's going, 52's the mic. Ed Reed's going, no, 20, I'm the mic. No, he's the mic. They're talking to Eli at the line of scrimmage, and they're just trying to mess with him. Obviously, it was a terrible game. We ended up getting blown out. But that's the type of pressure that you're going to have when you're facing up another defense and another defensive coordinator that knows this is your first time seeing a game situation and game experience. They're going to attack.
And it's very different from what you ever see in college. It's like night and day. And you can't ever get better at that until you actually do it. And, Dave, coming out of college, everyone knew Davis Webb had the physical tools.
Absolutely.
The question is how he reacts when there's pressure in his face and when he's in game. So that's why it's important to see what he can do.
Even in a
limited thing, and I've said this before to you off the air. I don't think I've ever said to you on the air. What he actually does on the field these last two games isn't going to change my evaluation of him one bit because of the people around him and the injuries, and it's a small sample size.
Yes.
But at the same time, you'd like to see him get in there and get his feet wet a little bit.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Get in and out of the huddle, run a drive downfield. I mean, it's almost, you know, and I'm not comparing this because it's still a real game. It's still a regular season game. But it's almost like how you get a quarterback acclimated into the preseason.
Sure.
You want to get him as many drives, as many situations as he can. You want to see how he responds on a first, third, and long. Is he able to direct the protection? Is he able to do things, signal to the wide receivers? You just want to see his mannerisms in that person as a quarterback and as a football player.
All right, Dave, let's get to the calls at 201-939-4513. We'll take them in the order in which they were received. So we'll start with Jeff down in Maryland. He leads us off. Hi, Jeff. How are you today?
Hey, guys. How you doing, man?
Doing great, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing good. The season is done, one and done right now. And when I talked to you guys back some time ago when the Giants were, probably 1-4, 1-3, I told you guys how it was going to go down as far as on the way McAdoo and the deal with Eli. You guys didn't back me up. You had everything down on a script. But I'm not – the point I'm getting to right now is I'm not too comfortable with Spags being a coach for the Giants. I think we need to just move on and rebuild this team so that next year we have a better year, so that we don't go through the same drama again.
Okay. Sounds good.
No, and listen, this is the thing. I'm not saying whether people were right, whether people were wrong. I don't know. I don't know if he's still there. So I don't remember.
Hey, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay, there we go, Jeff.
And I'm not saying that you weren't right predicting what you said. I'm not saying that you wrong were with what you predicted. But number one, when John Mara addressed and changed head coaches to Steve Spagnuolo, he already said this is going to be an uphill battle. He said this is a tough situation for him to step into. And I love Spags. I love him as a coach. I love him as a man. I love him as a motivator. And I think you saw sprinkles of that last week up against the Philadelphia Eagles. Having said that, at the same time, you have to think overall, because what did John Mara also say? That there were going to be wholesale changes in regards to the organization. So we'll see, regardless of what happens this season and whether he becomes the head coach here or not, Steve Spagnuolo is still going to have an unbelievable career in the NFL.
Yeah, I know that, but I just, like I said, you know, nothing against, you know, I just want to see some changes this year.
We understand that.
Next year, we're not holding our heads down.
No question.
And also, ticket sales going down as far as the Giants, people not showing up at the stadium, all that, you know, things like that. You know, I just want to see a change. We have to make a change, man.
Well, Jeff, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I can promise you that there is going to be a lot of change.
Yeah, and believe me.
I can promise you that.
And when, like I've always said, you know me, I was a fan of this game long before I was a player. I love our fans. I love bleeding blue. I wear my Giants blue every time I put it on with pride. And I realize how difficult this season has been because I've been a part of it. 2003, Jim Fassel gets fired and knows that he's not going to be the coach with four games left.
3-13 that year?
Oh, yeah. It was glorious, to say the least.
And by the way, the end of that season was actually uglier than the end of this season.
It was way worse. I told you this story. Last game of the season, we're playing the Carolina Panthers.
I can't believe you're going to tell this on the show.
Oh, why not? I reach over here. I'm looking to my right. I lean over here. I had no idea who the player was next to me. Fully suited, Giants gear, ready to go. And I'm asking guys, I'm like, who is this guy? We ended up signing him on Saturday.
And he was an offensive lineman, right?
No, he was a special teams guy and starting on special teams. So I've been a part of this, and it is tough. It is difficult. And I've been a part when that 03, when the stadium was empty and we were getting booed and everybody had obituaries written about him. But what happens and what comes out at that time? True character of players and of an organization. We were able to rebound from that point on, and I have no doubt that it'll take place after this season as well.
And there's been two general manager candidates interviewed. The Giants have announced, obviously, that they interviewed Dave Gettleman yesterday. That was on Giants.com, so obviously you can come to call about that as well. And he's someone that has history here, Dave. He's been here before.
I have a lot of history with
him. But he's never run the thing here either.
No.
So while I understand some fans would be upset because it seems like you're not making a big change, Dave Gettleman being in charge of all matters of personnel, maybe not as big of a change as bringing in somebody that's never been in the organization, it still would be a significant change.
It definitely would. I have a great relationship with Dave Gettleman.
Yeah, me too.
For seven straight years. I mean, Rich Soibert and I, 5:15 in the morning, would have coffee with him before going in the cold tub. Just talking about offensive line, life, just BSing. That's what
Richie
we do in the morning.
And Dave Gettleman conversations.
Oh,
much have
it,
been
the three of us would
tremendous.
Sit there and talk. And Dave Gettleman was a tremendous help to me during my career because he was always honest. He was always fair, but he was always motivating. Because I'll never forget the first time that he really came up and we had a discussion. It was my rookie year. Ended up starting every game my rookie season, all 16, the first since Pavaro to do it. And I'll never forget, I'm sitting there walking with ice packs around me. He's like, played a hell of a lot of football this season, haven't you? I'm like, yeah, I sure have. And just, you know, he goes, everybody goes through it. You hit, everybody goes through hitting a little bit of a wall. But, you know, these are certain things that you can work on. And he did that for me throughout my career. So his relationship with players, I know I can speak for it. Soibert, any of the guys that have been around him, he will be honest. He will help you try to become the best football player that you can be because he is hands-on. He will talk, and he is, like I said, he will always be honest with you. He will always help motivate you, but at the same time, always fair.
Oh, he's honest.
Oh, yeah.
You get Dave Gettleman in a room, and you ask him about a player, something he's seen. Trust me, there are plenty of
And I love that.
Who has better phrases and expressions than Dave Gettleman?
Well, he has the accent.
He has the
and
Boston accent
and
everything.
Oh,
yeah, I know. And by the way, the other person the Giants interviewed, by the way, and they announced was Mark Ross, the Giants vice president of player evaluation, of course. Kevin Abrams, they've said before, he will get an interview as well, who is the interim general manager right now. So that's where the Giants GM search update is, and once they have a general manager, they'll go down the road of trying to find a head coach. Let's go to Mark in Chicago. He's up next. Hi, Mark.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Merry Christmas to both.
You too, Mark.
Merry Christmas, Mark. Where do you live in Chicago, my man?
I live in Libertyville.
Oh, all right. I know exactly where that is. I'm a Chicago guy. Brother Rice.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
Know.
Merry Christmas. So, happy holidays.
Yeah. Well, hey, I one question about the snacks thing, and then David, I have two offensive line questions.
Okay.
Is the Pro Bowl based on fan voting?
Fan, players, and coaches, media.
You know, Mark, it's funny. Yeah. I'm going to pause you for 1 second. Because, Dave, I will not lie. I think it was about 7 years ago. I poked my head into that auditorium when the players were voting for other players.
Oh, when the rookies are asking who they should vote for and everybody's yelling?
When people are asking, like, who plays for this team? Who's this guy? Who's that guy? And, you know, because there are a lot of players like you that love the game and is a fan of the game, too. But there are also a lot of players.
Love the game. My daughter last night, she wakes up. I get her to bed. She wakes up last night at, like, 11:30 to get some water. She's like, what are you doing, Daddy? I'm in there watching Pittsburgh film. She's like, that's how I am.
And
that's
it's funny.
I've
so Mark,
been.
And Mark, my point is I poke my head in the room, and Dave, there are a lot of players that they love to play football, and they're dedicated to playing, but they're not a fan of the game per se. Yeah. So I think a lot of these players do struggle with who to vote for in some of these Pro Bowl votes because they know the names. Maybe, like you said, they see them on Hard Knocks, so they miss guys like Snacks.
Without a doubt, because they don't really watch full film. They may know this player and know, oh, he's been a great player, but you really don't know how has he performed exactly this season.
Correct.
So go ahead, Mark. Go with your question.
My take on it was that maybe because the Giants have had such a poor season, you know, they've been removed from some national games.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, when you're using the Fox number 6 broadcast team, you know, they're not getting the exposure. I mean, some of those plays that Snacks makes, you know, running down screen passes and everything, it's unbelievable.
Earlier in the season, I can't think of what game it was, they were running a zone stretch to the right side that was supposed to go to the outside of either the right guard to the right tackle's outside shoulder. Snacks pushed the backside guard into the play, the left guard, all the way into the play that was supposed to be like a 4 or 5-hole play outside of the tackle on the other side.
And you're right, Mark, there were two other plays on screens. I think it was in the Cowboys game. The Cowboys ran a pair of screen passes. Snacks redirects and gets 6 or 7 yards downfield to make the play. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Unreal. So, anyway, my two offensive line questions. Last week, Len from Maryland called in to you, Dave, and he also called in to Dottino, and he was suggesting that maybe we ought to build the line from the center out, or maybe he didn't quite put it that way, but he was saying that we needed a new center, and both Paul and you sort of came down on him a little bit because Brett Jones was having such a good year. And my initial impression was, yeah, he's having a good year, but compared to what on the rest of the line? So I thought about that, and then I watched the game on Sunday, and I saw this Jason Kelce, And, man, that dude was unbelievable in what he was doing in his blocks.
Player.
I mean,
yeah.
He was blocking three guys on one play. And so that got me thinking, if there was a stud, and he was a sixth-round draft choice, if there was some guy out there that you thought was a stud center, a, you know, potentially a Pro Bowl player like Kelce, why wouldn't you do that? You're not going to be able to build the offensive line in 1 year, and you could move Brett Jones over to guard and, you know, build that center position. I think if the opportunity is there to do it and you can't get anything better, maybe tackle where we need more, why not do that?
Okay, to start with, this has a lot of different outlets to it to where I can go.
Go for it.
Okay, to start with evaluating offensive linemen and to evaluating Brett Jones, I'm not evaluating an offensive lineman based upon who the guy is next to him, to the right or to the left. I'm looking at him individually, his technique, and the competition that he's facing as a player individually. So I know that you said, well, compared to the other offensive linemen, when you evaluate one player, you're just looking at that one player regardless of who's around him. The thing that you love about him, where he is a better center there than a guard, which you said moving him out, he doesn't have the long arms and the reach that you need to have as a guard. And that's right. Where his height will catch up with him, because he doesn't have the length up against longer defensive tackles who go with that stab, to compare to, you know, the close contact combat that goes place up against a nose technique or a one technique that he faces. His size and his leverage and his strength are a complete advantage to him, because we were looking at film and I showed them, and we looked at plays where we were breaking down Brandon Mebane on the Los Angeles Chargers. See, I said Los Angeles Chargers.
Well done.
It's hard to – I always keep saying San Diego. But Brandon Mebane is a tough guy to get underneath.
He's like 330 pounds.
He is a tough guy to get underneath because of, once again, he's 320, 330 pounds. But he's only about 6'1". Brett Jones got underneath him on a back block, was able to work his hat back front side, and finished him on his own stretch play. I understand what you're saying about Jason Kelce. Jason Kelce is one of the players that I talked about that got snubbed from the Pro Bowl because of the way that he has played. But Brett Jones has played extremely well this season, regardless of who's been around him. Having said all of that, in regards to a draft and in regards to a center and the guards, it is huge. I know a lot of people put so much emphasis on the tackle position and the left tackle position, but think about the way that the bigger offensive guards and the bigger centers have been drafted for one sole reason: to be able to hold the depth of the pocket to where quarterbacks that are shorter, like a Drew Brees, like a Russell Wilson, will not get that pocket collapsing at their feet where they're getting moved off of the mark and they're thrown off of their back leg. So if you could get a guy that would be a center that could be a Pro Bowler immediately, like a Fredrickson in Dallas or somebody else, of course you would take that pick down the road. But having said that, if you don't have that ability and you don't have that available, I would have absolutely no issues with Brett Jones not given, but the opportunity to compete for the starting center position in 18.
What's your second question there, Mark, on the offensive line?
Thanks for explaining that.
Absolutely.
And let me just say, the one thing that I always heard about Jones was he was undersized, but when you look at him versus Richburg and also Kelce, he's right. He's actually bigger than Kelce.
Yeah,
so
he's,
anyway, I don't know if that's valid. But, okay, the second question, you sort of got into where I was going with your explanation of the guards. You know, it's pretty obvious the right guard has been a real issue for us, especially when the defense
Which
stuck.
One?
Both when Jerry was in there and Fluker. I mean, Eli's gotten his chin strap up to his nose a couple of times, and he's fumbled the ball.
Yep.
So it got me thinking, okay, if you're going to go with a five-receiver package, everyone in the stadium knows you're going to pass. Why wouldn't you switch out your right guard or your weaker pass-blocking guards and put in a better pass-blocking guard for that play?
See, that's something in regards to rotation, getting guys in and out.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate the call.
Thanks.
That's almost like going with the two-quarterback system. You get yourself in trouble in key moments in football games because you may have the wrong guard in there at that case instead of the run stopper or the pass-blocking one. Not to mention, you already have a precise amount of time that you have to get in and out of the huddle to get a clean break, to try to get a pre-snap recognition on third down so that you're not fighting the clock and all of a sudden you're rushed out of it. People don't know the reads. The quarterback's rushing through his progressions. And then all of a sudden you have a terrible play and you don't convert. Anytime that you're trying to take extra time to bring a player in and out that's not a skilled position guy, especially at the offensive line position, that's a tough task to ask. It's easy when you're going into goal line or short yardage situations because you want to go jumbo. You want to put those bigger bodies on the end of the line. But could you imagine, like, the rotation of an offensive guard running in with two receivers out there trying to go in at the guard position and trying to do it calculating and still having tempo offensively? It just would be – it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I'm going to add two things to that, Dave. One, it's not like these offensive linemen are getting on and off the field quickly either.
No. You know, see, that, and this is a fun point of stuff that we used to do. Sean Rogers, big Sean Rogers, who was a teammate of mine.
Terrifying individual, by the way.
We used to do stuff up against the defense on purpose to make him run extra. No joke. We would come out of timeouts, and we would be standing out there in the huddle, hanging out or whatever, and getting ready for the TV timeout, and we'd have our base offense in there. And then all of a sudden, right before we go from TV timeout, you know, we'd run our four wides or whatever in. So all of a sudden, they'd go to some package. They'd try to run a defensive tackle in. We'd wait till he got to the sidelines, and then we'd substitute again. So you would just get him in between plays running sideline to sideline, yet you weren't changing personnel, just trying to tire him out and getting him to be worn down that way. We used to do it all the time, and for those bigger guys, think about it. You're
funny.
Stopping at the hash or the numbers. Now you're running back into the huddle. Now you're sprinting to the sidelines. It was a huge thing when it came to players' conditioning.
He must have been huffing and puffing.
Oh, yeah, especially in the third and fourth quarter. You would hear guys, certain ones that were funny, would be like, you guys aren't going to rotate again, are you? What are you guys doing over there?
And you also, by the way, don't want your offensive lineman that you're in there to dictate run pass either, because that's
no
obviously
doubt.
Something that shows up. On tape. Jeff in Rhode Island, he's up next. Hi, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Just want to wish you guys and everybody at the shop there and your families a Merry Christmas.
You as well, Jeff.
You as well.
Okay, Johnny, do you remember the assignment you gave me at the around the beginning of the season?
I do not.
In regards to Eric Ingram?
What was the assignment I gave you?
Evan Ingram.
About the tight end, the thing I had going with Travis Beckham. You wanted me to come up with something for
a nickname.
Eric Ingram.
A nickname, yes. Evan Ingram.
Well, I came up with something anyway.
What do you got?
Here it is. I'm double E. Throw me the ball, I'll secure it and score a TD. And I won't pee in the end zone.
Wow.
Now the reason I gave Jeff this assignment is because God, what was it? 5-6 years ago now?
Yeah, when a little explanation.
Well, I will.
Travis
Beckham Jr., who was the Giants tight end.
Yeah.
Right? And he had basically in his career a lot of injuries. He had that one big play against Green Bay.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah,
so,
somebody against
yeah, I remember.
Coverage,
yeah. One,
I
big play.
One big play against Green Bay.
One
so,
big play.
So after that game, Jeff calls up the show and he goes, John, I'm going to call that the IAT. And I go, Jeff, what do you mean? He goes, it's about time.
Now that's good. Now that is good.
All right, guys. Happy holidays.
Happy
thanks,
holidays.
Jeff, you
Merry
too.
Christmas, Jeff.
Good talking to you.
Double E's not bad, though,
double
for Evan Ingram.
Bad.
I like double E.
Well, Easy E, he goes by Easy E. I said, but Eli was Easy E.
No, Eli's Easy E.
I know.
He can't be Easy E. Double E's okay. What's
double
E's double
all
e?
Right.
I like that. 201-939-4513. Jason is up in Maine. Hi, Jason. How are you?
I'm cold. How about you guys?
not as cold as you.
Not as cold as you, but yes, it is definitely getting a little bit colder out there. I love it. Sweat factor at a minimal
you,
out
Dave.
There. I say the sweat factor today is about a 4 or 5.
And trust me, Dave's sweat factor is on like an exponential chart with everybody else.
Everybody always says that. If I'm in a warm room, I've always got red cheeks and I'm hot. And people are like, what? I remember sweating playing G.I. Joes as a kid, let alone now.
David Deal has the Patrick Ewing foul line as I like to call it. Yeah, exactly.
The wristband, the big wristband.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I got a couple questions for Dave.
Sure.
The first one is, I'm just wondering, can you take me through what happens when the quarterback yells kill, kill, kill right before the play? What exactly is going on there?
All right. Obviously, I'm taking that this is from the Steelers game, all of that stuff. Okay, number one.
Oh, no, just basically throughout. I've seen quarterbacks do it before.
No worries. I'm just saying that was a prime example of where it could have been used. But a lot of times what you're going to do is when you get into the red zone or when you get in certain instances where you're trying to go up tempo and you're trying to keep a defense with their personnel on the field, you're going to come in with a two-play sequence. Usually it's a run alert pass or pass alert run. And at first to start off, you know, you'll go with a dummy cadence just to see if the defense will show anything, if they want to do anything to kind of manipulate their coverage or whatever. They don't adjust through that first pre-snap kind of huddle cadence type that you're going through. Then secondly, if the quarterback wants to stay with that first play and that there's not going to be an alert, he'll say kill, kill, kill. That lets everybody on the offense know that what he's saying, whether it's a code word, whether it's a term, whether it's the cadence, whether it's red, white, and blue, numbers, however they do it as an offense, okay, now I'm saying these for real. What I'm saying is that's coming out of my mouth is a legit thing. There's not going to be an audible. We're rolling with either the play that we have and the snap count that we have. So basically, he's killing the audible. He's killing the alert. He's killing any of the dummy calls, letting everybody on offense know we're running this play.
See, that's interesting. I thought kill, kill, kill was we're not going to run the first play. We're running the second play in the sequence instead.
That was the second one. No, that, I was going to go into it. That's the second part. Like I said, you can go into it two different ways. Same thing. If you go into the huddle, he's going to the next. It depends on what huddle and system that you're in.
Right.
We did when we would do kill or whatever, that means we're killing the alert. We're sticking with the original play.
Got it.
Some people use kill, 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 that we're killing the first play. We're going to the alert. And then you'll hear the – there's always code words in what a quarterback says that you make up and you come up with as a team. And that code word means, like, here we're rolling into this play. We're going into the alert. Okay, this is where we're going to go. So those are all – it depends, like I said, what quarterback system and who's running it.
So
Jason, it could go either way. It either could kill the alert or it can kill the first play.
In short, it's the quarterback basically alerting the rest of his teammates which play they're going to run on that specific play. Possession.
The one time I'll never.
Okay.
The one time we went into during those pre-snap stuff when you're just running cadences, you know, you're a lot of times you're faking calls as an offensive line. You're trying to see if a defense will adjust just to you saying stuff. And I'll never forget the one time Rich Soibert and I, you know, in between that time, him and I were like, hey, we make a call. Sure enough, Eli alerts right to the call that Soibert and I just made as a dummy, 3-yard tackle for a loss. We're like, no, that completely backfired. The one time that they got us.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny. All right, Jason, what else you got for us, pal?
Okay, well, I'll just end with this because I'm just wondering, well, what do you guys do if you're in a very loud environment and it's very hard to hear? How do you guys communicate those signals when it's maybe even too loud to hear the quarterback if he's in the shotgun?
Well, that's one thing that Eli or the quarterback will walk up. You know, you'll see him come up and walk throughout the offensive line, the centers, and the guards, and everybody's pointing from the protection-wise. But I think everybody sees quarterbacks look out to their wide receivers, make signals however they do it. You know, each week they change them with whatever hand signal it is for a route combination with wide receivers. And then you go to a silent count, which means that there's no cadence. You know, some people go with the head bob. Some people go with the guard tap to the center so he can keep his head up the entire time, because sometimes if it's the center head bob, the minute that he puts his head down, a defense will stem so that if that center looks back up and you go to stick with the call and now all of a sudden they're in a different formation, it throws off the timing of the cadence. So sometimes you'll see the guard tap, okay, we're okay to snap the ball. So those are the different ways that you can do it.
I know you.
Okay.
Thank you, right. Jason. Appreciate the call, buddy.
Thank you.
I know you weren't with many other quarterbacks, not named Eli Manning, but how much better was he
was
at doing?
Kerry Collins
and Kurt
Jason
Warner.
Jason Garrett
and Kurt Warner.
And Kurt Warner.
Right?
Yeah.
So, how much better was Eli doing all that pre-snap stuff and reading the defense and making those calls than the other? And I'm not trying to get you to take shots at the other guys.
I'm not taking shots at anybody.
But that's something Eli
and I can be a fair evaluator of him.
Yeah.
Number one, in those years that we were rolling, Sneed, Soibert, myself, Kareem, O'Hara, I tell this all the time. We would have competitions and walkthrough or in practice to see if we could blurt out the change of protection or an audible before Eli. Anytime he'd be like, all right, alert. We're like, we could never get it out before him. He would always be checked to the alert, checked to the protection, just from recognition, the safety being over one spot. He just had that knack for it. But when it came time to game day and inside and in at a huddle, I said this before, prime example where you see leaders and people who are confident when bullets are flying around them, that 2011 NFC Championship game in San Francisco. He's got grass out coming out of his face mask, his jersey's pulled over. We're in third downs, and he's changing protections. They're running all over defensively, changing stuff systematically. All right, check to this. He's moving wide receivers. That stuff never fazed him because he knew that with the work and the preparation that he puts in, that at that point, you're not thinking. You're not hesitant. You can lean on your preparation as confidence that you're just reacting. It just comes natural to you. And there's no reason why we were able to have fourth quarter comebacks and the rides that we did on the postseason and in the road because of the confidence and preparation of him directing everything when there was just complete chaos around him.
201-939-4513. We got about 10 minutes, folks. We have a couple open lines. If you want to get in and talk to David Thiel and myself, please do so. Richie in Long Island is next. Hi, Richie.
Hey, what's up, guys? Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, Richie.
All right, so I wanted to talk about, like, the GM search that's going on. You know, not to get into, like, specific names or anything, but kind of, you know, in lieu of the holidays, you know, like a wish list, if you will.
I like it.
You know, for the GM. So the new GM, you know, maybe has a more focus on the linebackers. I feel like that position has been, you know, a little not addressed
for
the time period.
Yes, I concur.
You know, I just want to hear, you know, if you guys, you know, wanted to weigh in, like, you know, if a new GM, what would you want them to focus on considering how this, you know, this team is at this moment?
Okay, that's great call, and everybody loves a nice Christmas wish list when it comes to their team right now. Whoever the new general manager that does come in, obviously offensive line. This is something that we've been talking about for years that has not worked out, and it has been a clear problem for the Giants offense in staying balanced and running the football. So offensive lineman, especially a tackle, so that you can get a true left tackle in here and have Flowers move to the right tackle position, but also –
or guard, for that matter.
Or guard, but also having a tackle who can be a swing tackle in case of emergency. We'll look at the defensive side of the ball. Linebacker, it is crucial. If you've seen the way that we've tried to cover elite running backs that are catchers out of the backfield or dynamic tight ends throughout the last two seasons.
And defending run plays outside the numbers.
Defending run plays outside of the numbers, being able to run and chase it down and taking great angles. That's definitely a position that is a need at linebacker position.
And, Dave, here's the thing. You can find guards in the draft in the second, third, and fourth round that can come in and start right away.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you scout them right, you can do that.
No question. Yeah. I mean, especially that's the big difference that when people always talk to me about evaluating offensive linemen coming from college to the pros, it is a lot easier to transition interiorly than it is at the tackle position. That's a given.
Yeah. Yeah, especially, you know, how you're talking about with offensive linemen. I called in a couple of days ago, and I told P-Dot, like, if the GM comes in and, you know, commits to Eli, then I want more of an emphasis on this to focus on the run game. Because if you're bringing in Eli back again and you're not putting pieces in to focus more on the run game, then you're kind of doing him a disservice, and you might, you know, we're going to end up seeing the same results, you know, him having to drop back and pass 40, 50 times a game. That's just not fair to him.
Speaking to an offensive lineman, run the ball. Run the ball.
No argument, Richie.
That's what I want to see, you know, because you can't, you know, have him come back in and the same cycle just happen again. It's going to be the same thing.
It's the definition of insanity. Doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Thank you, Richie.
Yeah. Thanks,
appreciate the call, buddy.
Thanks, Rich.
I want to go back to what you talked about with the evaluations of the guards and centers and,
yeah,
you know, where Flowers is going to go. I mean, Dave, there's a good chance that next year you're only going to have, excuse me, one player at the same position on the offensive line, depending on how you want to move stuff around. If Eric Flowers stays, if Brett Jones stays, I mean, it could be as few as one, or there could be nobody at the same position, depending on how the offseason goes. You don't know.
And that's the thing that you, for us now, being a spectator and fans and fans of the New York Giants that are passionate, you love that because it's going to bring competition out that you're going to have to earn your right to be on the football field at whatever position, and it's going to be a conglomerate because when this is a problem in regards to the offensive line that needs to be addressed, there are going to be no scholarship. It's going to be based all upon performance and sticking together and put the best five guys out there that will get the job done cohesively.
Do you think moving Flowers to right tackle would significantly help him?
Yes.
Why?
I think because of, number one, the ability to be on the right side would give him a better vision of the things that's coming at him. He is a much better puncher, believe it or not, with his left hand than his right hand. If you watch him with his technique, a lot of times you'll see his left hip before his right, and a lot of times that is an issue because you're giving up your inside arm and your inside leverage to where you can get pressed or pushed back. Secondly, it allows you to protect him so much more in an offense scheme-wise because if you look at teams that run 11 personnel predominantly, or even teams that run 21, two tight end, or two running backs and one tight end, 9 times out of 10, it's usually on the right-hand side to where you can chip help, where you can run the football that way, and you can take something off of that pass rush position.
But he would still inevitably have the same technique issues in terms of one-on-one blocking against a lot of the elite pass rushers now, Dave, line up over the right tackle, not the left tackle.
A lot of elite pass rushers are on both sides of the ball correct. When you're looking at the great mm-hmm. football teams. So I don't think it matters really what size. I just think that he'd be more comfortable, not to mention, I know that you're sitting there on both sides. A lot of the time, still to this day, those quick twitch guys are right defensive ends going for the strip sack force fumble on the blind side of a quarterback.
Fair enough. Second part of that question I want to get to in terms of the evaluation of the guards and centers. Why do you think with the college game it's easier to evaluate the inside guys as opposed to the outside guys?
I think it's easier to evaluate the inside guys because that's a position where you can take tackles that are in college that could be a smaller D1 school, D2 school, and move them inside to where they've played up against athletes outside and in confined space. It has a lot room to where you could slide protections, you get double team in the run game. You can ease the transition in so much better. And also, in regards to the run game, what you do inside at the center guard position is a lot different than the tackle position. But the one thing that is still hurt and continues to hurt players coming from college to the pros is spread offenses going up-tempo where it's about plays and not about fundamentals and techniques. It's hard to evaluate a guy to be a New York football giant when his entire career, he's never had his hand in the ground and he's never been in the huddle because he's looking towards the sidelines for the play. That's not NFL. That's not New York Giants. And to ask a player that is going out of a two-point stance, that it hasn't run out of or kicked out of a three-point stance and hasn't faced play-in and play-out elite defensive ends that are grown men, that challenge your technique where, like I said, it's not about technique and fundamentals. It's about how many plays you're running offensively to overcome talent as a college that really hurts them transitioning into the NFL.
And a lot of Giant fans and people in the area have brought up Saquon Barkley. Who will? I don't think
that would be fantastic.
I don't think
if you put him behind a bad-to-average O-line,
thank you.
He's going to be a bad-to-average running back.
And you can, I think – Let me put it this way. It takes a lot of money, Dave, to build your tackles up. I mean,
yes.
If you go in the free agency, you're spending a ton of money.
And
look, and it's getting more like that at the guard position as well. You know, that's getting to be an expensive position too. But I think in the draft specifically, like I mentioned earlier, you know, if you want a top offensive tackle, you're looking at a top 15 pick. Sometimes the first guard in the draft doesn't get picked till the second round.
I know.
You can fix the inside of your offensive line through the draft if you pick the right guys, obviously, quickly as opposed to the tackle spot, where even if you pick the top tackle in the draft, look at Jake Matthews. His first year with Atlanta was rough.
Struggled.
But he's turned into now one of the better. Now, he's not the best, but he's
one of the good,
solid tackle.
Yeah.
But it takes some time for these tackles to turn into what you need them to turn into at the pro level.
You are going up against freaks week in and week out. And that's not a joke. And I believe me, there's times in college that you know you're going up against competition, but there's times in college where it's easy. You know what's coming at you. You know this defensive end's a one-trick pony. I stopped this initial move. He's going to try to turn it into a bull rush, and by that time the ball is going to be gone. In the NFL, you are going up against professionals that for an entire week, all they are doing with their defensive line coach and their defensive coordinator are identifying your weaknesses and how to individually attack you as a player. It's a lot different than when in college, when you have systems, this, that, and you don't have that type of time to break down players like you do in the NFL.
You know, you mentioned the linebacker position too, Dave, and I think what's lost on people is how different the linebacker position is in college now than it is in the National Football League. And I think maybe not to the extent you have it with offensive tackles. I think it's a big transition, especially for 4-3 linebackers in college to come in and play 4-3 linebacker in the NFL. Look, those outside pass rusher edge guys, they're going to rush the pass. Yeah. They're going to do what they do. But as an off-the-ball linebacker, I feel like that transition now from college to the pros, especially since there aren't many 4-3 college teams anymore, they're almost running 3-4s, that I think that's a pretty hard transition. Look at Miles Jack. It took him a while. Jalen Smith had the knee injury, but it's taken him a little bit.
Because it's not about running and tackling. It's about being able to cover. It's a big thing that, you know, we watch a lot of players that on defensive side of the ball in college are unbelievable because they're always playing downhill. But when you play against a vertical passing offense, it puts you in a vulnerable position if you don't hit your mark on your drops, if you get eaten up in play action. Those are all things that you learn with experience.
I hope I get to do another show with you before the year is over, but in case I don't, what are your two picks, AFC, NFC, to get to the Super Bowl right now?
Okay, for the NFC,
it's tough.
It is tough. I'm going to roll with the New Orleans Saints.
Here's where I went, and I was kind of with you. I think either the Saints or the Falcons, but I think the Saints are more likely to upset the Eagles in the first round.
Okay.
And then I believe that they will be unable to win in Minnesota in the NFC Championship game.
Oh, you know the big
that
Minnesota.
That is a tough play. Oh. The Vikings on the road. If the Vikings had to play that NFC Championship game on the road, I don't think they can win.
It's a different story.
But if they're playing that game at
home,
that defense is legit.
And listen, and I've said this before, and I'm not taking anything against Jared Allen as a football player. When you put him in a road stadium and you were playing at home, he was a very good to great at times defensive end. When you put him in that dome with that crowd noise, with a silent count, he was a deadly defensive end. And it's no different when you watch Griffin, Hunter, Linville, Barr. This defense is stacked from top to bottom. And one of those Pro Bowl snubs, Harrison Smith.
Yeah, excellent safety.
You talk to anybody on the Vikings staff or their football team, they will tell you how important Harrison Smith is to that defense.
I'm with you. I think it'll be a Saints-Vikings NFC Championship game. How about the AFC? What do you got?
I'm going to go with New England.
Shocking.
I believe me.
What if I promise you Antonio Brown is back for the AFC Championship game?
Because I believe at that point that it would be going through New England and not through Heinz Field.
I would. Unfortunately, it's boring, but I happen to agree with you. Excellent show, Dave.
Yeah, awesome stuff.
For David Deal, I'm John Schmelk. That's Big Blue Kickoff Live on this Thursday, heading into Week 16, game number 15 for the Giants of the NFL regular season. Tomorrow, it's Meadow and Feagles taking you and previewing you for Giants and Cardinals. And, of course, the game will be on the radio here in New York on WFAN on Sunday, 2:10 pregame. Make sure you check it out. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. And if we don't talk before then, happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Have a great weekend. You're tuned